We present The Unbelievable Truth, the panel game built on truth and lies. In the chair, please welcome David Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to The Unbelievable Truth, the panel show about incredible truth and barely credible lies. I'm David Mitchell. Now, how can I describe tonight's performers? Let's just say, if I'd organised my dream dinner party, well, I wouldn't be here tonight. I'd be having a curry with Mozart and Hitler. So please welcome Miles Jupp, Holly Walsh, Marcus Brigstock and Lou Sanders. The rules are as follows. Each panellist will present a short lecture that should be entirely false, save for five hidden truths which their opponent should try to identify. Points are scored by truths that go unnoticed, while other panellists can win points if they spot a truth or lose points if they mistake a lie for a truth. First up is Miles Jupp. Miles, your subject is milk. An opaque white liquid secreted by female mammals for the nourishment of their young. Off you go, Miles. Fingers on buzzers, the rest of you.
The world record for the expression of breast milk is 42 metres. What a moment it was when that record was set. I'm sure we can all remember the commentary of a breathless Barry Davies. They think it's all over my glasses. It is now. One milkman-turned-celebrity was Benny Hill, who used his experiences as the basis for his cover version of the tear-jerking ballad Ernie the Fastest Milkman in the West.
Lou.
Was Benny Hill a milkman?
He was.
Yes!
Yes. Benny Hill began his working life as a milkman at Hans Dairy in Eastleigh, Hampshire, where there is a road named after him, Benny Hill Close. Sounds a bit sort of threatening.
Raising the self-esteem of cows is a great way to make them produce more milk, as is doing their hair, giving them new false teeth, and a really good push-up bra. unlike milking a moose, which, much like listening to any of the comedy shows I've made for Radio 4, can only be done in absolute silence.
Marcus.
I mean, I feel slightly foolish here.
It's not the bra thing, is it, Marcus?
I think it is the bra,
oh.
Yeah.
No, that's not true.
Well, try telling that to Rigby and Pella, who I know very, very well do a remarkable set of brassieres just for cows.
Cows have actually been fitted with bras, but it isn't about milk production. It's to prevent mastitis and to keep them warm in cold climates.
Right.
And to make them look sexy.
Yeah.
Possibly. I don't know. I've never seen a cow in a bra. But.
For people listening to this on Radio 4, let's try this. Alexa, Google cows in bras. Clear that from your search history, listeners.
Milk is used to clean the crown jewels in the Tower of London. I use it to clean my own crown jewels.
Holly.
One of those two statements is true.
Which?
I reckon it is, because I bet there's a ton of, like, ivory and stuff knocking around in the crown jewels, and you need milk to clean that.
Do you need milk to clean ivory?
Yeah, people historically used to use it to clean piano keys.
Oh, I didn't know.
Is that one of the facts that's coming up in a minute?
No, but that's interesting. You actually know something about what... about, not know something in general. But you actually know something about what milk can be used to clean.
Yes.
But I'm afraid it's not true.
No.
The Royal Jewel Collection is traditionally cleaned with a mixture of gin and water.
Henry Ford hated cows after having to work on his father's farm, which marketed its cows to passing tourists using the slogan, "They'll make any sound you like as long as it's moo."
Lou.
I think Henry Ford worked on his dad's farm.
That's absolutely right.
Yes.
And he hated cows as a result. Ford regarded dairy cows as unsanitary and an inefficient use of farmland, and he was an early proponent of alternative milks, serving soy milk ice cream at the 1934 World's Fair, an innovation that was met with ridicule at the time.
Oh, wow.
To be honest, I always follow the rule that breast is best, but when I can't get hold...
Yes! Breast is best. It's been proven.
Sorry. breast is best doesn't mean that much, does it?
It means, like, if you can, and it's sometimes hard to latch on, but if you can, I know my boyfriends have been able to latch on through perseverance. If you can get them to, it is better than formula.
Okay.
But no judgment, whatever way you do it.
Well, have some of your boyfriends had to have formula?
Yeah.
If they couldn't latch on.
And how long do you go out with someone until you move them onto solids?
Should we carry on?
I always follow the rule that breast is best, but when I can't get hold of one, I do just like the French, whose infants for years were suckled by donkey's teats. You may only have heard the shorter version of that rule, but the long version, I think, has more poetry. In Belarus, you're able to buy a dairy drink under the appetising name of man milk. I myself am working on a similar product, so do pop by the dressing room after the show. Just follow the smell of Greek yoghurt.
Thank you, Miles.
Oh, thank you, Harry.
At the end of that round, Miles, you've managed to smuggle three truths past the rest of the panel, which are that giving cows false teeth helps them produce more milk. Cow dentures allow cows to chew their food until an older age, thus increasing milk production.
Yet my grandmother...
Why is everyone nervous?
She got dentures and produces no milk.
Well, that means she isn't a cow.
Oh.
The second truth is that milking a moose can only be done in absolute silence, or the flow of milk dries up. Moose cheese can be bought for around $1,000 per kilogram. So that's worth keeping quiet for. And the third truth is that French infants were once suckled on donkey's teats. Today, donkey milk is considered the most suitable animal milk for infant feeding, as it is the closest to human milk in terms of its protein composition, high nutritional qualities, and high digestibility. So there's a fact you weren't expecting. And that means, Miles, you've scored 3 points.
Yeah.
OK, we turn now to Holly Walsh. Holly, your subject is Italians, natives or inhabitants of Italy, a country in south-central Europe which occupies a peninsula extending into the Mediterranean Sea. Off you go, Holly.
For a start, there has never been a Prime Minister of Italy who speaks Italian as their first language. Giorgia Meloni speaks Sardinian, her predecessor, Mario Brother, speaks Swahili, and his predecessor, Silvio Berlusconi, spoke the language of love, Welsh. In fact, in the 1860s, only 2.5% of Italians could speak Italian. The rest got through with a mixture of hand gestures and by speaking English slowly and loudly.
Miles.
The percentage thing, I reckon, was true.
2.5% of Italians speaking Italian in the 1860s.
Yeah.
That is absolutely right. In 1861, the year of Italian unification, only 2.5% of the population could speak Italian. At that time, Italians spoke in different regional dialects, so the new national government chose the Florentine dialect of Tuscany as the official language of all the Italian states and the basis for modern Italian, due to its association with cultural icons such as Dante, Petrarch, and Machiavelli.
Oh, you don't. I'll pick up some stuff on this show.
Yeah.
The biggest business in Italy is, of course, being in the mafia.
Lou.
I think that might be true. Like, in terms of money.
It is true.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, the Italian mafia turns over around 140 billion euros a year and 7% of Italy's GDP through money lending, extortion and robbery. They make more than any other company in the country, including the oil giant Eni, which turns over a paltry 99 billion euros a year.
But what you might not know is that Italy has a largely cheese-based economy. In Sicily, buffalo mozzarella is still used as a dowry because if you're going to sell your daughter, boring old cow's cheese will not do.
Marcus.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's true. Buffalo mozzarella is used as a dowry.
No, it isn't. No.
Really? Buffalo mozzarella?
Really? Not really even good. Buffalo mozzarella is used as a dowry.
Is there any mention of burrata?
Is burrata the one where they just inject cream in the middle of it?
Yes.
No, I think that's an eclair.
No. In parts of northern Italy, a wheel of Parmesan is acceptable as security on a bank loan for each...
Marcus. Ooh.
That's true.
You've broken even. That's
yes!
true. The North Italian bank Credito Emiliano accepts Parmesan cheese as collateral for loans. The bank's climate-controlled cheese vaults hold 430,000 wheels, worth around 190 million euros. In 2009, thieves tunneled into the vaults and stole 570 cheeses, but were apprehended. The manager of the warehouse commented, "Thank heavens we caught the robbers before they grated it." If they suddenly put that cheese on the open market, the price of Parmesan would collapse. That basically is the same plot as Goldfinger, isn't it? But with cheese.
Of all the things...
They'd have to have called it Cheese Finger. I can see why they didn't go there.
It's a decision they made late in the process as well. It had long been cast. Yeah. So what should be about them at the centre, though? What should be the main...
Massive $30 million reshoot, but yeah, it got them out of jail.
Everyone was sitting there going, it just won't work with gold. What are you talking about? It has to be cheese.
Yeah, it's the same with the man with the cheese gun. Yeah. Cheesy Locks and the Three Bears.
That's not a Bond film.
Cheesy Eye is, though, isn't it?
Cheesy Eye, yes. The most exciting film ever made about conjunctivitis.
He loves only cheese.
Holly.
Italy is also the number one games country in the world. It hosts the annual hide-and-seek world championships, where the current champion, Enzo Moretti, has been hiding undiscovered since 1972, when he slagged off the mafia.
Lou.
I think hide-and-seek bit is true.
You're right.
Yes.
It is. Yeah. Yes, the hide-and-seek world championship takes place every year in Consonno, an abandoned town near Milan. Competitors come from all over the world to play hide-and-seek in a specially constructed arena filled with obstacles to hide behind. That sounds a bit weird, doesn't it? But if it's in an abandoned town, you thought, oh, right, they're going to be hiding around this town. But no, it's in an arena. Well, if you could do it in an arena, why bother to do it in an abandoned town? You could do it in a town
maybe,
that's still viable.
Yeah, just do
maybe
it
Maybe the town isn't abandoned, but the people who live there are even better at the game. They've studied it for years.
Yeah. But the crowning glory of the Italian sports diary is the Car Smash Cup, or Il Coppa Disastro. It originates back to the 1900s when Italians drove on the right in the countryside and the left in the city. So the suburbs were essentially a massive bumper car track.
Marcus.
Yes, I've driven in Italy and I believe that they originally had two systems, one where you drove on the left and one on the right, and now they've merged them so you do either and both, depending on what you fancy.
The first half of that, at least, is true, Marcus.
Yay!
Yes. Until 1923, Italian drivers drove on the right in rural areas and on the left in cities. To comply with their first highway code of 1912, all Italians had to drive on the right side of the road. However, people living in cities with a tram network were allowed to keep driving on the left as long as they installed signs at their borders warning drivers of the change. This system was in place until the mid-1920s when Rome and Milan were the last cities to adapt to driving on the right.
Also, they have those crazy hairpin roads that are just so lethal to go down, and not having any idea of what side you're going to be on is...
It's a flawed system. Mm. Isn't it?
But it's a beautiful but flawed system.
Exactly. I mean, one of their major cities, all of the roads are made of water. So.
And that is all you need to know about Italy, land of the rising sun, birthplace of Turkish delight, and the place I am proud to call home.
And that's the end of Holly's lecture. And at the end of that round, you've managed to smuggle no truths past the rest of the panel, which means you've scored no points. Next up is Lou Sanders. Lou, your subject is parties, social events at which people enjoy themselves doing things such as eating, drinking, dancing, or playing games. Off you go, Lou.
Everyone's favourite party is a search party. Will we find her? Who did it? Shall we just save time and arrest the husband? Stephen Hawking once hosted a party for time travellers from the future and nobody showed up. The same excuse I'll be using if my Hackney Earth show doesn't sell out next year. This is not a plug. The show is on the 24th of May at 6 p.m. Bear Grylls is scared of cocktail parties because his church told them that they make you homosexual.
Is that true that Bear Grylls' church told him that cocktail parties...
It is not true that Bear Grylls' church told him that cocktail parties make you homosexual.
A group of residents in Blackburn, Lancashire, hold an annual birthday party for potholes in their road. And in 2023...
Holly, really hope that's true, because that's a brilliant idea.
Well, you might be pleased to hear that while it's not true of the residents of Blackburn, Lancashire, in 2017 and 2019, residents in Nottingham and Worthing threw a second birthday party with a cake and candles for a pothole in their area.
I love that.
Meanwhile, in Ireland, you can rent out a genuine Pope mobile for stag do's, and it comes with a male guide who looks underage.
Marcus.
Okay. In order for me to not seem like a lunatic, here's what I think. I think the Pope visited Ireland and a Pope-mobile was either constructed or was left in Ireland. Mm. And they thought, now what are we going to do with this now the Pope's not here? And their first thought was, stag doos!
You're absolutely right. Yeah. Yeah.
And on the stag doos, if they choose a different best man, a different coloured smoke comes out the top of them. It's incredible.
In America, 70 students drank so much alcohol at a party that the air in the house was registered positive on a breathalyzer. And that's where the term house arrest came from.
Holly.
I don't know. That's not possible, is it? To breathe out. Yeah, maybe you could breathe out booze.
To the extent that the air set off a breathalyzer. You're absolutely right. That is true.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yes. In 2017, 70 students in Maryland drank so much alcohol at a house party that the air in the house registered positive on a police breathalyzer.
If you're posh, hello. If you're posh, forget about hiring a bouncy castle for your party. A Spanish company will hire you a bouncy cathedral, but you might need planning permission to erect it and you might get charged council tax.
Miles.
I think that if you get planning permission, you can erect a bouncy cathedral.
Tricked you, double tricked you.
Oh,
Yes, that's not true.
Not a single aspect of it.
None of it's down as true here. Let me read it again because I wasn't really listening.
Newsflash, man's not listening to a woman.
No, you won't need planning permission to erect it.
It's a temporary structure. Of course you don't need planning permission.
Oh, listen, I've had builders like you. They... Oh, no, it turns out you do. You just need to apply retrospectively. Take it down, you prick. Do continue.
Henry VI had some unusual favourite party games, including piss on the pudding and pin the arm on the leper.
Holly.
I think peeing on a pudding was a party trick.
Well, it's one of mine.
It may be, but it was not an unusual favourite party game of Henry VI. Or, as it says on my script, Edward VI. But nobody the
Sixth. Who did I say?
Henry VI. You probably don't think that makes much difference.
Okay. Yeah. The children's party game of Hunt the Thimble was based on a medieval French party game, Hunt the Mouse, in which a dead mouse was hidden in a room for guests to find. Of course, they no longer play Hunt the Mouse in France for various reasons of hygiene, so these days the French play a game called Hunt the Tampon instead. Last month, I was invited to my first gender reveal party. I made a spectacular entrance, but everyone looked shocked. What I didn't realise was it was the baby's gender that was supposed to be revealed, not mine.
Thank you, Lou. And at the end of that round, Lou, you've managed to smuggle three truths past the rest of the panel, which are that Stephen Hawking once hosted a party for time travellers and nobody showed up. He arranged balloons, champagne and nibbles, but only sent the invitations out the day after the party had already taken place. He regarded the event as, quote, experimental evidence that time travel is not possible. The second truth is that Bear Grylls is scared of cocktail parties. In 2017, Bear Grylls admitted that top of the list of things that terrify him are cocktail parties full of strangers. And the third truth that Lou has smuggled is that the French play a party game called Hunt the Tampon. In France, the game we call Hunt the Thimble is known as Hunt the Tampon or Cache Tampon. And that means, Lou, that you've scored 3 points. It's now the turn of Marcus Brigstock. Marcus has recently started a new podcast with his wife about their everyday life. After the launch, podcasts were officially declared full. Your subject, Marcus. Your subject, Marcus, is sound, something that you can hear or that can be heard. Off you go, Marcus.
In the US, sound is measured not in decibels, but in cups. We still use sounds and ounces, and the French use le sound système métrique. Edvard Munch's The Scream was originally called Startled Man with Spaniel Ears. Whale song is believed to heal asthma in the gullible and originated... and originated when a sperm whale made a bitchy comment about a fin whale and all the other whales went, ooh. Shrimps and prawns are so loud they can deafen submarine sonar operators with their incessant prawny racket.
Holly.
I hope that's true for so many reasons.
Oh, it is true.
Oh, yes. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Yes, although the blue whale makes the loudest noise of any individual animal, the collective noise of shrimps is the loudest known natural noise, and the collective sound created is loud enough to interfere with sonar, deafening submarine operators, and whiting out underwater communication. When together in colonies, known as shrimp layers, the sound is louder than a jet taking off and is above the human pain threshold.
Big Ben's chimes are spaced out differently at 10 p.m. to allow ITV newsreaders time to read out their headlines between the bombs. The loudest sound ever recorded was the silence when Liz Truss told a joke at a conference for disgraced Burks. By the end of 1979, The Who were all registered deaf and qualified for a disability grant.
Lou.
They should be called The What, if they're all deaf. but I do also want to say maybe they got hearing aids and a grant.
No.
Okay.
Dog researchers have discovered that Liverpudlian dogs have Scouse accents. They go...
Miles.
I think that is true.
It is true. Oh. Calm down, Lou. It's not home time.
I buzzed at the same time for that one and I really wanted it to be true, so I just got a bit excited.
Oh, gosh.
A 2006 study found that dogs will develop a bark similar to their owner's regional accent. Thus, dogs in Liverpool will bark at a higher pitch than other dogs, while in Scotland, dogs will have a lighter tone to their bark.
Yeah. Liverpudlian dogs go, woof. Yeah, I don't know. Tarzan's trademark is palindromic and was first included in the TV show when Johnny Weissmuller stubbed his toe on a tree root. Elephants' sensitive hearing is so easily damaged that elephants living near Heathrow have been given earmuffs to protect them from the sounds of planes, and both Apple and Dr. Dre are in a race to make the first noise-cancelling massive flappy headphones for them.
Right, elephants have got sensitive hearing and I won't hear otherwise.
I mean, I don't know if they do, but is what you're saying is they needed earmuffs
No, he said elephants... Oh, no, not this again.
They said elephants... sensitive hearing is so easily damaged that elephants living near Heathrow were given earmuffs. That's the thing.
Then forget the whole thing.
You want to withdraw the buzz?
Yes.
Holly.
Elephants have to have ear protectors when they're near the
Well done, you got a point. When Windsor Safari Park opened in 1969, the four baby elephants newly arrived from Africa were so alarmed by the sound of jet aircraft landing and taking off at nearby Heathrow Airport that they were fitting with elephant-sized earmuffs. I bet that was elephant ear-sized, because otherwise it wouldn't work, would they? Safari Park closed in 1992 and later became Legoland, as may happen to us all. I can feel my left arm turning to bricks as I speak.
An elephant can hear a mouse scampering from over 6 miles away, particularly if the mouse runs over some cardboard, because as we all know, cardboard conducts sound 17 times faster than air.
Miles.
The cardboard thing.
No.
Okay, move on.
Nonsense. Tell you what that's
true about.
I don't
want to hold you up, David. Keep going, Marcus.
The cardboard thing is true of granite. But if you replace it with cardboard, it becomes untrue, yeah. Marcus.
Bats can hear if you're naked, and their ultrasound is affected by the mere...
No, they can't, Miles.
Nonetheless, in my lecture, I go on to claim that ultrasound is affected by the mere presence of genitalia, which is how clever moths evade capture. They wiggle their bits and the bats have no clue where they are. My wife operates the same system at home.
Thank you, Marcus. And at the end of that round, Marcus, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that Tarzan's trademark is palindromic. And the second truth is that moths wiggle their genitals to evade capture. Who doesn't? Hawk moths confuse bats by wiggling and rubbing scales on their genitals. Another insect to use its genitals to create sound is the male water boatman, which makes the loudest animal sound on Earth relative to its body size. It does so by rubbing its penis against its abdomen. And that means, Marcus, you've scored 2 points! Which brings us to the final scores. In fourth place, with -3 points, we have Holly Walsh. In third place, with -1 point, it's Marcus Brigstock. In second place, with 1 point, it's Miles Jupp. And in first place, with an unassailable 2 points, it's this week's winner, Lou Sarden. That's about it for this week. Goodbye.
The Unbelievable Truth is devised by John Naismith and Graham Garden and features David Mitchell in the chair with panellists Miles Jupp, Marcus Brigstock, Holly Walsh and Lou Sanders. The chairman's script was written by Dan Gaster and Colin Swash and the producer was John Naismith. It was a random production for BBC Radio 4.